This is the PropTech VC Podcast. We give you unique insights into how innovative technologies are disrupting real estate. We interview top entrepreneurs, investors, and knowledgeable experts to share the inside scoop in this fast-moving industry. It's hosted by leading PropTech VC, Zane Jaffer. Let's dive into today's content.
Today, we're joined by Vila Lika, the founder and CEO of SingleKey, a platform that screens tenants. Vila's also a serial entrepreneur, and we're going to have a good discussion about what's happening with housing today and the future of PropTech. Vila, welcome. How's it going?
Hey, Zane. How are you? Doing well. Thanks for having me.
So you're based in Canada, right?
I am. Yes, we're based in Toronto here in Ontario.
Awesome. Why don't you start out by telling us your story and how you eventually got to the position you're in now as the founder and CEO of one of the largest tenant screening platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's been quite a bit of an adventure. My background was I started off as an engineer, and towards the end of my degree, I just really got the entrepreneurial bug. It started off with door-to-door sales. It was a job actually that I took on because I felt that engineering didn't do a good enough job of teaching you kind of the soft skills you needed to just talk to people, influence, persuasion. And I thought it'd be a fantastic way to kind of bring up that part of my skill set. And I did surprisingly well. It was a summer job. We were kind of offering these type of new innovative green lawn care products to, you know, different suburb neighborhoods. And I turned it into a game. For me, it was more of like a basically kind of your typical iterative, you know, a game where like you have a pitch that you come up with in your head. You run it, gather the feedback from the customer, see what their reaction is, and then try something else and see if that works better. And then keep iterating until you get it right. And I went from being a total introvert and an engineer to being one of the top sales guys on that team. And the next summer,
this is you having the courage to go up to a door and knock on it and basically
exactly, yeah. And I find this is the hardest part for a lot of entrepreneurs, is kind of like figuring out the sales part. And you know, a lot of us are very technical, great at kind of building software, building products, but that seems to be the big kind of challenge, is hey, how do I break out of my shell and kind of approach customers, get them to, you know, work with me and build product. For me, that was the first thing that I kind of figured out and got really good at. There's no substitute for just, you know, there's no way to learn it other than just kind of jumping in with both feet and doing it 100 times a day. And that was the best part of kind of going door to door, because you try your pitch on 100 different customers a day, and you get good very quickly with that type of repetition.
That's right. I think the most experienced entrepreneurs realize it is just a numbers game.
Yep.
And you have to get started, which is where most people fail. Think about it. There's so many people that have opportunities out there, and they're too lethargic to even send an email out. The next layer is to pick up the phone and make a call, and there's even more resistance there. But my God, to actually go knock on someone's door, every excuse you can imagine is there, right, to call it a day and not do it. And I think once you realize it's about knocking on doors and counting the numbers and creating a funnel, it's an emotional process. And I think that's a key thing entrepreneurs need to figure out. It's a numbers game, and don't be.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. Yeah. To start off with, you do get a lot of that emotional kind of resistance. Like, oh my God, I'm talking to strangers, like, and I'm selling them something. This sucks. Right. But, you know, you realize that's actually the best way to sell, because people tend to be much nicer to you face to face than, you know, over the phone or over email. So you get much, much higher success rate, actually, door-to-door. Plus, the best thing about that as well is you get to pick up on all the kind of subtle cues, like, you know, like facial expressions and kind of that body language. It tells you a lot about how your pitch is going. So it's definitely a good way to start. It's just by kind of setting up meetings with people. You know, you don't have to go door-to-door, but show up on client site and have a quick conversation with people. You learn a lot more
about how good your pitch is. Not to get too political, but I'm sure some of our listeners in America are thinking, I'm not going to knock on someone's door, they'll come out with a gun.
Well, so, you know, it's funny you say that. So, like, fast forward a year later, I started my own company doing the exact same thing and competing against my previous employer. And, you know, I was hiring all my buddies from school to basically go door to door, and we'd go and tackle entire subdivisions at the same time. And I was kind of teaching them how to pitch and all that. After the first year, we realized that the growth in Canada is limited, and we wanted to try a new market. So we actually kind of packed up, brought our top five sales guys with us, and drove down to New York and tried to actually spend about 2 weeks doing door-to-door sales, both in Boston, Massachusetts, as well as subdivisions of New York, close to New York City. And boy, was it a very different experience, right? You know, here it's a very kind of like the suburbs are very open and solicitation laws are very lax. Like there's no like nothing preventing you from just doing that. Where that's not the case in especially many parts of New York, where we've had the police called on us a few times.
Yeah. There's one entrepreneur I was talking to recently who's selling a product to residential homeowners, and you know, he really wanted to get some traction and validate things. Even during COVID, he put on his mask and he went door to door and knocked in a certain neighborhood, and he got a wait list from that. So there's no excuse not to get started.
Absolutely.
Even if it means knocking on people's doors, that's what you got
to
do.
Absolutely, it's the best way to kind of validate your thoughts and ideas. I find that, you know what, what I find really well works, Zane, is that it's very easy to kind of focus on one thing and build momentum. So, for example, you've got a new product, you've got that momentum where you're thinking about the product, you're building it out, you're fleshing out the product, the idea, the entire flow, and you just want to keep going, right? You want to keep going and grow that momentum. And we made that classic mistake. When we first started Single Key, we started building a rental platform that was supposed to automate and kind of automate specifically the onboarding process of a lease. So when you're finding a new tenant, when you're marketing on different kind of rental websites, bringing in the leads, kind of like a bit of a CRM solution there on the different prospective tenants, and then kind of doing the whole rental application, signing the lease online, doing all that stuff. We basically went heads down for like 4 months straight to build out what we thought was really kick-ass kind of implementation of that type of solution. The biggest mistake we made, though, obviously, is we didn't actually talk to customers during that time, right? So we thought we were solving a real problem, and we didn't really kind of like lift our heads up to really kind of just talk about every single feature with our customers. Is this something that you know, really saves you time, that you find valuable? So what we ended up doing is once we completed the first real MVP, which was way more than an MVP should be, we went to one of the kind of big realtor conferences here in town, did about 500 demos with people, and out of those 500, maybe five of them actually ended up using the platform, which we were actually giving away for free at the time.
This was without doing any customer validation. You locked your head down for 4 months. So in some ways you got lucky that you built the product the market wanted.
We didn't. That's my point, is that we spent way too much time building that product, did a ton of demos, nobody bought it, right?
So nobody
that
was it. Like, okay.
Nobody bought it. That was the aha moment. We were like, oh my God, we just spent all that money and time, you know, building something that we thought would be awesome and the market wanted. Where in fact, what we should have done is we should have probably spent 2 weeks building together really kind of lean, scrappy MVPs, put it in front of a customer and talk to 20, 30 people, get that feedback, and then continue building and iterating from there. And that's a hard thing to do because it involves you kind of like stopping that momentum, talking to customers, which is a very different type of mindset than it is in building products, and then coming back and then constantly iterating, launching the product, you know, in different phases and getting people to actually use it, monitor that behavior. So it slows things down a bit, but it's such a better approach to do things because you don't get to the finish line and find out that you built something nobody wants.
So Vila, walk us through the mindset for a moment. I've felt this at times. I've toyed up with some, you know, new startup ideas, and for years and years before my company was a success, I was also building in a silo, thinking I knew what the market wanted. Yeah. It wasn't until we did customer research and customer validation that, you know, our company took off, and eventually it sold for $780 million. Yeah. Couldn't have got there without, you know, building it around the customer. What is the mindset like? And remind yourself, right? Because now you're obviously, you've changed your mindset. You believe it's about customer validation. What goes through your head as an entrepreneur, the psychology, when you feel like, I've got a great idea, I want to get going? Why don't people talk to customers? Could you walk us through the mindset there?
Right. And I think, you know, the Lean Startup book by Eric Ries does a great job of kind of explaining this concept. I think what the conflict that you have as an entrepreneur when you're first building out your initial product is that people won't want to use it unless it's perfect.
Right.
Right. And that's what gets you into trouble, because you want to keep adding on more and more layers, more and more features, and making it more and more polished. And you don't realize that the process of actually launching a crappy product and getting that you know, interim kind of feedback from customers, that's what makes the product great. It's not you kind of overbuilding and over designing it to the point where, you know, now you have to go back and kind of maybe remove some of those features or kind of tweak the product to make it great for customers. The other thing that you know, I learned as well is that, man, convenience and simplicity is king. And it depends what type of kind of business you are. If you're in a B2B space, there's more tolerance for I think complexity, because you have the time to actually sit down and do demos and kind of onboard customers. But if you're in the B2C space and you don't have it just doesn't make sense to actually get on the phone with every customer to explain your product. It needs to be, especially the first version, it just needs to be dead simple, intuitive, and as little features as possible. So when, you know, the second time around, after we learned our lesson back in 2018, we said, okay, now what is the simplest thing that we could solve, and how can we do that in the easiest way possible? So the first version rental platform took us 6 months to build out. The second one took about 6 weeks. and that was basically our tenant screening platform that we built out. And it was just a Frankenstein, a really crappy looking product. It barely worked, just an integration of different kind of services together. But the traction kind of came in right away, right? And that initial traction, now you've got like a couple hundred people using your product right away. There's a huge source of data and validation that you can now use to further develop your product. And you're on the phone every single day with customers complaining about, oh, this is broken, that's broken, why can't I do this? Those are the things you need to build onto your, that's your next feature right there. So yeah. that was our experience.
I think another mindset that I've encountered is you're so in love with your idea. Yeah. It feels so true as your last name is true to you, right? And you can't doubt, this is my name, this is the year I was born, this is where I live. Those are facts. Sometimes entrepreneurs get so hung up on the idea that it seems too true to them. This is exactly how the idea is going to work. I know exactly what the market wants. And it's very hard to be objective, you know? And this is what makes entrepreneurs so great. They're irrational, they're crazy. But that's very dangerous because you will not do customer research. You see it as a tick box exercise, and it can't be a tick box exercise. You need to take yourself out of that mindset and need to realize, objectively realize that you're being very subjective, and realize Absolutely. That you have to find a few people or talk to them and build a pilot around them.
And to add more to that point, Zane, I think that you do make those assumptions in your head. You're saying that, hey, first of all, I assume that this is a problem that needs to be solved. And I assume that people are going to spend the time to learn and onboard, you know, actually try this product. And I further assume that they're willing to pay for this product and so on and so forth. So you make a lot of these leap of faith assumptions. Right. And each of those assumptions could make or break your entire business, right? Because if they're not willing to pay for it, you don't have a business. Or if they're not willing to at least spend some time kind of trying it out, that's a leap of faith assumption. So you have to be very careful about those. Hey, to get to the finish line, what are these big leap of faith assumptions that I'm making to get to that point? Like, which of these assumptions could really kind of break my business? And those are the first assumptions that you need to test out, right? So before you move on to the finish line, go out there and build an MVP product. And that's the whole point of kind of like the iterative kind of, build and implementation. And the whole point of kind of basically testing out your assumptions to make sure that, hey, is there anything that's seriously wrong with my product that prevents me from getting to the finish line?
Rila, how do you go about, how about this challenge with PropTech, where the base of customers isn't sophisticated? You know, real estate has been the slowest adopter of technology. How do you deal with the fact that sometimes what the customer says they want is too basic a need that they're asking for, and that, you know, you feel like you have a more elegant solution in mind? How do you basically make do with that gap? Because you're dealing with an audience here that doesn't understand technology much, and, you know, in your head, you might feel like what they're asking for is just too simple. And if I build what they're asking for, there's nothing exciting about this. It's so basic. How do you deal with that brutal fact?
Yeah, it's a tough one, Zane, and I'm hoping to kind of get your thoughts on this as well. We're a great example. We cater primarily to landlords that typically tend to be in their 40s or 50s, right? So definitely a great example of kind of unsophisticated, not digital natives. And that's why we really kind of prioritize intuitiveness and ease of use. It's tough because I think, you know, at the beginning, when you identify that pain point and you find the initial solution, you definitely need to listen to your customers and build exactly what they want. But then how do you build something they don't know they want? Because a lot of customers, right? And you know, you have to realize that after a certain while, when I started this business, I wasn't even a landlord. I didn't really know what kind of being a landlord was all about. Obviously, we had a lot of advisors and other, you know, co-founders that, you know, were landlords. But at this point now, after, you know, screening 10,000 tenants, I would say that I probably know more than any other landlord out there about kind of what their life's like. And after, you know, once you collect all that data in your head, you now are in a much better position to understand kind of what the next move should be on that product than any one customer. So I think it's kind of like a natural progression. I don't think you should kind of like build the next kind of like car from the horse right up front. I think first you need to kind of solve that immediate problem and then eventually kind of grow into that product. It's tough. I think that's kind of where the whole, you know, being a visionary and understanding kind of where the market's going and what the future needs will be is all about.
But it needs to be grounded in a lot of data from customers and lots of firsthand interviews with customers. Looking at a market research report is only part of it. You've got to go down and talk to the customers themselves. We'll be right back.